Time Podcast, episode 1, cleared for the option.
Alright, squad in VFR, movement to change crew, 4 by Alpha. Line up and wait, 7 range, 4 by Alpha.
Mark Tower, 172, Romeo, down, hold short on the 133, ready to take off.
Alpha,
Delta,
3, 2, 1, Mike, and downwind for runway 25.
I'm John.
I'm Chris.
I'm Brad.
And I'm Mark.
And we are the In the Pattern Podcast.
Welcome to episode 14 of the In the Pattern Podcast. With me tonight is the whole gang, and we're here coast to coast. We got Mark in the Pacific time zone. Chris, I'm in the Mountain time zone. Brad is in Central, and John is in the East Coast. We are now going to be called the Coast to Coast Aviation Podcast. Probably not. No. Why change a good thing now?
Don't confuse people.
I know, huh? We're on. This is episode 14. As we speak, 13 is being edited. Hopefully that'll be out in the next few days.
And 14, 13 minutes.
13
and
minutes.
34 seconds are edited.
Woo! Only 90 minutes to go.
Actually, I don't know how long this one is going to be, but it should be shorter than the last one. I apologize for that.
I got real close on the guess last time, huh?
Yeah, it was what, an hour 50 something?
Something like that. I think I said an hour 48 or something.
Yeah. A lot. We're going to try to keep that down because I don't want to edit that much all the time.
Yeah.
So we're on 2 minutes now, so let's go.
Here we go.
Duty flying? No? Okay.
Who's got anything interesting to say? No, I've had quite a bit going on, especially in the last week or so. Brad,
about time.
Brad's been flying his ass off.
No, not too much.
No?
Just a few.
Yeah? How many?
Just, 5 hours.
5 hours since?
More than us.
Yeah. What? I'm not even sure.
But that was that.
I'm not even sure I got anything loggable. Actually, I've flown, but not PIC, which was actually yesterday's. I think the first time I've flown since last time.
Oh, it wasn't dual.
What did I?
Did you get your test done yet?
What do you mean, the written?
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, passed the written.
Now you got something to talk about.
Yeah.
You passed? You took it and you passed?
Yeah, passed with the 90%.
All right, well, I guess this podcast is done now.
Yeah.
That pretty much covers it. Chris took a test and passed.
Did we?
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we covered that last time.
Did we?
Yeah.
Did we?
Yeah, remember?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I led right into it, I think.
Did you? All right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I haven't heard it yet, and it's 13 minutes into the episode.
I thought we talked about it.
I'm pretty sure we did not.
Oh.
I think you were about to take it the next day.
No, I did.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
I think you're about to take
it. You know what? I think it was I led in with, I'm scheduled to take it tomorrow. Was that it?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes. I did take it. Yes, of course. Everybody.
No, and I know that for a fact because right. I just listened to a point where I was talking about you still studying. So
yes.
Yeah.
We have not discussed that you've passed.
Oh, okay.
Apparently, hell froze over. So.
Yeah. So, I went in to take it over at Westwind Aviation. It's over at Deer Valley. They're one of the other schools over there, and everything went real good. He said that I was going to have 62 questions, two of which won't be counted. That they were, you know, they would be like new questions that they haven't asked or whatever, and they're, you know, that they'll maybe use or not use in the future, but they won't count against me if you get them wrong, or count for you if you get them right, even, I guess. But at the end of the test, I only still had 60, so that wasn't quite correct. But so he comes in and he says, so any guesses as to what you got? And I said, I don't know, 81. And he says, oh, I'll give yourself more credit than that. You got a 90, which I was impressed with, because up until that point, all of my practice exams – I've been averaging in the mid-80s the whole time. So I'm glad that I beat my high score, as it were.
So what did you miss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you miss?
I don't know. I didn't. He asked me if I wanted to see. I didn't really care. He goes, "You want to see what you missed?" I'm like, "No, not really. I don't really care." I was done with the thing in like 45 minutes or so.
It's about. I was a little less than that, but
The thing that was is that the few weeks before, I was just. You remember I was talking about. I just can't keep in my head all of the formulas, all the different math all the time. You know, it's like I'll practice doing, whatever. And then I'll get all those down just fine. And then the next day I'll practice something else. And then I'll come back and try a practice test and I'll get to that section. I'll be like, oh damn, now I forgot how to do this, you know, part of the math. So I just kept at it. And, it was fine once I got to the test. I didn't have near as many of those type of questions as I thought I was anyways. So, and it's funny, after it's all said and done, if I was the FAA, I would change that test so much. Not saying that it's too easy because, there's a lot of stuff to go over, but really a choice one out of three, A, B, or C, I might change the format in some way. I don't know. What do you guys think about that?
I thought it was pretty straightforward. I mean, I'm used to taking tests like that, so.
Yeah, but just A, B, or C. I mean, a blind person having no knowledge of it should be able to get a 33.3% to start with, and you only got to get barely double that just to pass.
It's true.
You know, I don't know.
Well,
the longest answer is usually the right one.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a kind of a pile of crap, but I don't know. I guess the studying I did for it helped a lot, and doing that and then immediately going into the oral, I think was useful. The oral obviously is more of a realistic test.
Yeah, that's still what I'm dreading, how that's going to turn out.
It'll go better than you think it will. Yeah. Just don't stop studying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my thing was when I got one of those things wrong when I was practicing, I tried to figure out why it was wrong and why the question was important or not. Some of them are just you kind of scratch your head and wonder. But a lot of them, I mean, those test questions are there because people have screwed all that stuff up and gotten into fairly big trouble doing so. And so my thing is if I don't know it, I should figure out why and why is that important enough to make it onto the test.
That's a good
that's
point.
my whole spiel.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. The other thing, too, is it got me to learn the FARS. That's one of the things that I think it's useful for.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know where to find everything in that FAR aim yet. If you were to ask me the specific ruling on it or what the FAA says about something, I might be able to give you the correct answer, but I don't know if I could go directly to it into the book yet. Not that you need to if the answer is right, I guess, but
it's more important that you know the regs. But, I don't know. My philosophy on the whole thing is that, like, the FARs and the test questions and the procedures and the checklists and all that stuff that they want you to know, whether it's for a primary, private pilot or sport pilot or one of the advanced ratings, it's in there because it not knowing it killed somebody else. Or not following the checklist or not following the procedure, ended up in a smoking hole. And so these are somebody's efforts to try to save my life. And I'm going to try to stack the deck as far in my favor as I can.
Mm-hmm. So I was, done with that fairly early in the morning, went over there and gave my instructor a copy of, my test, and she has that on file. So I'm at this point, I was expecting actually by today to be able to tell you that I'm a private pilot. Cause I was ready to, all I wanted to do is go do a couple of mock check rides and then go take the check ride that following week. But I've ran into one thing or another with 4 Mike Alpha. Unfortunately, the air conditioning broke after that day I flew it by myself. The next flight, Jackie took it up and she said it wasn't working. So I don't know what the deal is with that, but, kind of sucks. I'm really used to having air conditioning. And
just open the window.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's...
You don't need your charts.
It's, you know, it just eliminates you flying from at, you know, in the middle of the day. Either you go flying early in the morning or you just don't fly. Unless you want to do more night stuff, because it's just too blazing hot inside that thing. It's just a microwave.
You know, that brings up a good question. Is there anything preventing you from doing your check ride at night?
Not really. Well, I don't know.
I don't know a lot of DPs that would do it.
What about the fact?
Maybe for safety.
Well, what about the fact of, you know, of showing pilotage and stuff like that, where you're using ground references that you won't be able to see at night?
You still kind of do that though at night.
Yeah, but and not near to the extent that you could do it during the day, and the distance off that you could see this thing coming at you or whatever.
True.
You know, I'm just saying, like, trying to follow railroad tracks at night, next to impossible at, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 feet AGL or whatever. Unless there's some
sort of
light.
I mean, you still use pilotage, you just use different forms of it.
Yeah.
At night. But I don't know, I was just curious because it just made me think about that. Like, well, is there anything really preventing you from doing that? Not that I would do it, because
I don't
weigh too much.
I don't know if there's any reg against it, but you're right. There's probably not too many DPEs that would do it.
Yeah, I would be hesitant to do slow flight and stalls at night.
That is true, too.
Yeah. How about doing steep turns, keeping your nose on the horizon that you can't see?
Yeah.
There's a few different things like that would definitely make it difficult, more difficult. Maybe they give you a few points, a few extra points for that.
But you can do the cross country part at least.
Yeah. You know. So that broke, and then the next week I went to go out to I wanted to practice, you know, the soft field, short field stuff, and just, you know, slow flight, stalls, turns around the point, S turns, all that normal, just private pilot maneuvering stuff, you know, just so I had all that stuff down. And then the next day I was scheduled to do a mock check ride with her. Well, we get out there and we're doing a run up, and just along the way, the ammeter, you know, the digital ammeter that's on the side was just going out. It would just go completely dim. And we were messing around, like I'd turn the alternator off or turn it on, and she'd even pull the fuse for the alternator, and it would come back on, and then it would go off. And I'm like, I don't know what's going on with the thing, but I don't want to find out in flight that the alternator is going bad. So let's just have it checked out. And she's like, yeah, good call. So it turns out it's just the gauge itself, which, you know, on a minimum equipment list, you could still go fly without it. Then again, you don't know if the alternator was going bad in flight. So I still haven't flown it. And it apparently, I think it was supposed to have got put in on Friday, but it didn't. So I didn't get to go fly it this weekend. So I think it got put in today. So I'm a couple weeks behind where I wanted to be, because I wanted to had my actual check ride by yesterday. But it is what it is, right?
You had me mentally going through the A Tomato Flames. I'm like, there's no ammeter on A Tomato Flames? No, there isn't. Wow.
No, but don't you need something to prove at night?
That's, yeah, on the flap side you do.
Yeah.
What?
You need an alternator. And you probably need it. I guess it doesn't say you need an ammeter. It just says you need an alternator.
Okay, yeah. I knew it was something to do with you had to have enough power to... Yeah. Handle everything and something like that.
Yeah, but if
alternator or generator, I think it is.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, the alternator's working just fine, but without that ammeter, I don't know. You know, you just don't know how many amps you're pulling or whatever. So.
Yeah.
Until the next thing you know, this thing's got two GNS 430s in it, and I don't know how much time battery's going to last with two of these GPS pulling power along with everything else. So, who knows? I mean, I've got my portable ICOM. Transceiver with me. I could always, you know, and it plugs into my headset, so I still have a radio. That's the best case scenario. So anyways, a little bummed about that, but no big deal. It's going to get done. So hopefully maybe during the week, this week, I'll jump out there at like 5 o'clock and go do some of that private pilot maneuvers that I was talking about and get that knocked out. And then, by the weekend, maybe Saturday, go do, a mock check ride with her and maybe even do the real check ride on Sunday, possibly. I don't know. We'll see.
Cool.
We'll see. You know, what I was thinking about today, I got my new, the little Sporty's Pilot Shop magazine in the mail today. And on like the second page, or actually the third page, is those Arctic Air portable air conditioners for $500. I'm starting to think that's not a horrible idea just to own one of those, especially if you're going to go rent airplanes in Arizona.
Well, you know, there will be plenty at Oshkosh that you can physically take a look at.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just saying.
That's the place of all places to go see anything built for aviation, isn't it?
Yeah.
So anyways, we'll get that down in the next couple of weeks, hopefully. In the meantime, just gives me more time to study for the oral. Oh, did you see my post about playing poker?
Yes.
Yes.
What? Someone was asking me what the density altitude was if this blah 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 blah. Because we were talking about something.
Me.
Oh, that was you, Brad? Okay.
Yep.
I forget who it was. And I said, yeah, I'm not at home, so I can't figure that out right now. What'd you say? You don't have
your POH with
you?
Oh,
me? Yeah. No POH. I said, no, but I had my oral study guide, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, when? And I took a picture of it and sent it up there with a picture of my chips in front of me. Which I shortly doubled up after that. I was going to take a new picture with my whole castle I had made in front of me with my book.
But nice.
Man, I've been kicking some butt. Just in the last week, I've won about $1,000.
Oh,
I won like 200 on Tuesday and like 400 on Wednesday, and then another like 500 on like Friday, I think it was. It's just a sick week down at the card room, but I always take my book down there and I read in between hands and stuff, and gives me something to do instead of just twiddle my thumbs waiting to play a hand. So good times.
Outstanding.
It was one guy goes, what are you studying for, to be a dentist? I'm like, no, where you get that from? He goes, well, it said oral on your book. not even close.
Yeah, you could have had some fun with that one.
Yeah, not even close. How goes the IFR training?
So far, so good. I think since the last time, I only got one flight in, but it was a good one. Went and flew 1.9 hours, and of that, what was it? 1.7 was in actual. Mm. So I had 12 minutes where I could see anything outside the plane, past the wingtips, and then the rest of it was just up in the soup. It was a great day.
Is actual required?
No. You can get the whole thing with zero actual.
With just under hood, right?
Just under the hood or sim.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, because in Arizona, that would be damn difficult to come by.
Yeah, no, and there's all those big 121 schools down there.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys will get their CFII and they've never been an actual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of scary. But, if you're going off to the airlines and you're not necessarily leveraging your CFII or you're not going to actually go into actual, I guess that's one thing. If you're just going to go sit in the right seat with somebody else who's, been a captain for a couple thousand hours.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be... I don't think I would go with somebody as a CFII if they hadn't been in actual. I wouldn't want to do all of my training for sure with somebody who hadn't been in actual.
Mm-hmm. Well, that brings up something I just remember, is that not too long ago, I don't know, 6 months ago or so, a CFI and a couple students, flew their plane into a mountain out here in actual.
Oof.
It was a twin probably. At the Pan Am school, or Transpac, I mean, at the Transpac school. It's, and it was, they were grounded for a few days till the investigation was done with what they needed to do. More than a few days. I think it was probably a week or so. I'm not real sure off the top of my head, but yeah, it just makes you wonder if something like that, you know, obviously the CFI is trained for it, but actually got into actual for the first time and, you know, his training didn't really kick in for himself or what.
Yeah, that's tragic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. No spatial disorientation or anything?
No, this one went really well. We went and shot an actual missed approach at Maple Lake, which is not far away. We got down to 600 feet, which is the 600 feet AGL, which is the decision altitude. And there's no airport. We can't see a thing. And that's an interesting feeling. You know, you get down, you're at 600, and it's like, there's nothing to see. I guess we're going someplace else. So we went up to St. Cloud, which has it has some lower minimums just because it's got longer runways and it's got it has an ILS. So if we needed to go someplace, we could go there. Although we also had an ILS where we launched out of at Crystal, Mike India Charlie. So we went up to we shot a VOR mist at Maple Lake and then went up to St. Cloud. And shot a – what did we shoot? We shot the VOR, and then we did the GPS.
Going to the runway.
What's that?
Sorry.
Oh, sorry. We shot the VOR, then we shot the GPS approach to the same runway, and then did a touch and go at that point. So I'd actually flown one all the way to landing. And then went back to Crystal and shot another GPS approach. And that was good. It kept my hands full, but I was able to keep the airplane going, and I was better able to keep up with the flow of things that you need to do just to maintain situational awareness in the aircraft. There's a lot going on, and just controlling the aircraft just by the instruments is difficult enough, even on a fairly stable day. And then you toss in, oh, you need to futz around with the GPS, and you need to futz around with tuning in the radios and talking to the controllers and talking to approach and then tower. It's a lot to keep ahead of.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, again, that's why they have you do 40 hours of it.
Yeah.
It's just so that you can practice kind of switching all of those tasks and keeping focused on just flying the procedure, making sure that you're always above the minimum altitudes and that you're always on your course and you know, just fly the airplane. It's tough, but it's a good lesson.
So was it clouds or was there any rain to it or any other weather along with that?
There was just it was clouds. There was a little bit of light rain, but not very much. Mm-hmm. Not that you really, once you're in it, you never bother looking out the window because there's nothing to see there anyway. So you're down. The first 5 minutes, I got to say, are the hardest. When you launch out and you're within 30, 40 seconds, you're up in the clouds, but mentally you're maybe not all the way there yet. You haven't completely made the transition. So you're still kind of looking around outside going, huh, and trying to trust your inner ear and all of that. All of that kind of stuff. And that's, it's hard to get the plane kind of dialed in and really under tight control so that you can kind of stick the needles right where you want them and hold them there. And after 5-10 minutes, you sort of acclimate and then you've got everything going and it's a lot more reasonable, but it's very disorienting. And my CFII was telling me it's like that all the time.
Hmm.
You launch out and you're hand flying the aircraft and it's, the first couple of minutes are just a bit disorienting until you get everything dialed in.
I remember you saying that after 15 hours of dual, you can just have a safety pilot, right?
Right. It doesn't need to be 15 in a row. What is it? I can do – yeah, right. I need 15 hours with a CFII, and then the balance of the time can be with a safety pilot. And you can also do 10 hours of simulator.
Yeah. And did I read something about – a safety pilot does not work if you get into actual?
Correct.
Okay.
A safety pilot wouldn't work in actual unless...
He's actually instrument rated as well, probably. I think that's how that works.
I'm not sure if they can be instrument rated and not a CFII. I think if you're in actual, it has to be a CFII.
I was going to say, because they're in the right seat.
Yeah, they're in the right seat, and they may not be ready to fly a procedure from there.
Yeah.
So I guess I wouldn't be comfortable going with somebody who wasn't a CFII sitting in the right seat.
Okay.
That would be... but we've had an abundance of actual in the last couple of weeks. Almost every single day.
Oh, wow.
We've had, you know, 600 to 2,000 foot overcast with just a day or two of decent clear skies. So I wish I had taken had time to take more advantage of it and do a little bit more training than I did.
You guys,
this is just so wrong.
I know it's backwards from your primary.
It's so backwards. You're waiting for all these clear days, and you're sitting here like, man, it's cloudy. I'm going flying.
Hooray for shitty weather. Yes.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, man.
It is totally backwards, but it's good. It's the stuff that you want to be in when you're doing your IFR.
How's the turbulence in actual?
You know, it varies. The first time I went into actual, it was more cumulus. And that's very turbulent.
Right.
Just that's why they're cumulus clouds, because they're getting lifting force and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. The this most recent time, it was all just a stratus layer, and it was completely smooth.
Yeah.
It was as smooth above or below the clouds as any nice clear night flying experience that I've had. So good stuff. I just have to do more of it.
Oh, what a shame.
Yeah, darn it. I have to go flying more. I did one other flight Friday night. Friday night, I got clearance from the wife to go. She's like, I've got the kids. Why don't you go flying? I'm like, okay. And
wow.
Found a plane at my flying club and checked it out and decided to fly on up to Madeline Island, which is in Lake Superior. It's one of the Apostle Islands, and it is a very pretty place. And it's only about an hour and 20 minutes away by Archer. So I picked up 3.4 hours or so doing that. And that was interesting. There was a lot of haze going up to about... initially it was about 5,000 feet, and then it rose as dusk set in up to about 10,000 feet. And so I was very much paying attention to the instruments to make sure I wasn't losing – I couldn't see a horizon, so I wanted to make sure I wasn't losing orientation in the plane. And the autopilot wasn't very happy, so I had to hand fly pretty much all of it.
I hate when that happens.
When the autopilot's happy, nobody's happy.
It just started doing sort of steep turns on its own, just alternating left and right about 60 degrees.
How was it doing? In comparison to your own skills.
I don't do my steep turns at 115 knots.
At 60 degrees.
So, yeah, I shut it off and pulled the breaker and said, that's enough of that.
That's
I had that happen last flight.
Oh, really? That's what...
It was starting to be funky, and I was like, you know what? Not worth it after, like, 30 seconds. So I was like, that's it. Off.
See, what the hell is with that? That kind of... My instructor has never went over the autopilot, and we got a damn nice... There's a damn nice one in there, too. Hey, you used yours on your freaking check ride.
Well, he yelled at me when I didn't,
Mine don't want to talk to me about it, you know, but I swear I'm going to go take this plane and go play around with it. But I'm afraid to a little bit. I'm a little bit afraid of it, of turning it on and it just deciding to do some stuff by itself and then turning the switch off and it's still wanting to do what it wants to do. You know, of course, you can just go pull the breaker then, I suppose.
Pull the breaker.
But here's
know
what
scares
me.
Know where the breaker is.
She has told me a story of a runaway trim control, and they pulled the breaker, and it was still all they could do to pull the plane back to keep it level.
Well, because the trim is still going to be dialed in that direction, but you know, you can overpower an Archer.
Yeah, it just kind of freaked me out.
Yeah, test it on the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, turn it, activate it on the ground, and then, you know, do the roll, make sure roll works, do the heading, make sure heading works. You know, then at least you'll have the basic functionality there.
Yeah, we're required to do that, and we have a whole checklist for it. Actually, we don't have a whole checklist on it. The checklist is in the supplemental section of the POH, but nobody at the flight school has bothered to actually put it in the official checklists. It's one of those things that's like, oh, remember how to check the autopilot by memory. And I'm like, no, this is no. So I put it on my own checklist because I was like, I'm not messing with that. So we do a whole check, make sure that we can overpower it, like hand overpower it. If we can't shut it off, we can shut it off with the button on the yoke and also the autopilot like activate button. So we test the whole thing out.
It's smart.
And it still acts up on you in the air, so you know.
That's weird. What kind of autopilot is it on that one, Brad?
It's just the standard Piper Auto 3.
Okay.
You know, just a roll axis autopilot.
Two axis?
No, just one, just roll.
Oh, okay. The one that's in the Archer that I fly, it's a three-axis. It's the S-Tech, I don't know, S-50.
Oh, the S-50, 40
the
or
55.
60.
It's a 55X, I think, or something like that. So, I mean, it'll do the altitude and the roll and the pitch and everything. You know, like I said, I haven't even turned it on. I should go find a flight simulator with that model in there and go play around with it.
Yeah, the place I really want to have a functioning autopilot is when I'm doing single pilot IFR.
Yeah.
That's where you're just busy, and it would be nice if you can just kind of have it work in the procedure and you kind of monitoring it so that you can sit back and be a little bit more aware of what's going on. But oh well. I'm getting close to, I think actually now I have enough hours I can start doing my checkout on the Aero. I need 100 hours of total time and 10 hours of dual in the Aero,
which is a complex in, right?
Right, it's complex. So it's got
retracts,
retractable gear,
flaps,
and a constant speed prop and flaps. Yep. Yeah,
cool.
Now, what FAR is that?
Oh, come on! It's been two episodes.
61. Something.
No, that'd be a 91.
Oh, okay.
Actually, I think it might be a 61. I think it's 6135.
Actually, no, you're right, because it's a rating.
Yeah. It's 6135.
35? E. Okay. Yep. What else? I flew yesterday, actually. I don't know if you guys saw the pictures I posted. I flew up to Payson with a couple friends of mine. Since I wasn't able to fly my plane, my buddy Todd rented an Archer over at Chandler and flew it over to Deer Valley to pick me up and another friend of mine, Dean, not the guy who has the little Cessna 140 that I fly with, but a different friend named Dean, who's not a pilot. But he came over and picked us up. And it was funny, I got a little story about this. While we're sitting at Deer Valley, and it's, you know, we got there about 5:30 or so. I thought he might actually be there by then, but not quite. So I had my little Icon transceiver out and was just listening to the traffic in the area, you know, because the tower doesn't open till 6 a.m., so everybody has to self-announce everything. So we're just watching planes take off and land and stuff, and there's plenty of action that early in the morning when it's nice and cool. And anyways, a plane calls in, Transpac something, 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 going to overfly the field and enter the pattern for a left downwind for runway 7L. And I'm like, all right. So I'm looking to the south. I'm looking to the south, but he ends up flying from the north and overflying the field, entering left downwind for 2-5 left. And so which is opposite. Everybody's landing on 7. Everybody's been talking about landing on 7.
You love those guys.
And he's English speaking. He's an American, which tells me one thing. He's a CFI. Because if you're from Transpac and you speak English, you're the CFI. Otherwise, you speak Chinese and you have a Chinese accent. So I know it's not one of the students. It's an actual CFI. So, because nobody rents their planes, they're just for the school, and you know, you either are a student or you're an instructor, you know. So, anyways, he enters left downwind. He crosses the field, enters left downwind. Then he announces Transpac, blah 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 blah, turning left base for 7 left, you know, blah blah blah. And I grab my transceiver and I pick it up, and I just as I click the button to start talking, someone goes, Transpac, blah, 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 you're on 2-5 left, not 7 left. And he goes, oh, yeah, sorry about that. And then he's like going around, and then he enters the pattern correctly. But damn, we just about had a head on there, you know. It was kind of intense. I was like, is he really going to do that? And he was just going to go ahead and land there, I'm sure. After we would have got completely lined up with the runway, he would have noticed it had a big ass 7 on it, not a 2, or it had a big ass 2-5 on it. I mean, not a 7.
Maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not.
Do you look at the runway number?
Yeah, especially, not at Deer Valley anymore, where I'm out of, because it's habit, but on airports that I'm not familiar with, I certainly do. I just always want to double check myself when it comes to that.
Yeah, that's a good practice.
Look, as I when I flew my first long cross country, I went up to Kingman, Arizona, and it's about 100 miles or something like that one way, it's a non-towered airport, which I hate. I enjoy towered airports. I like talking to somebody and having them talking back to me and giving me instructions because I can follow instructions usually. But if you give me my own way and I just get to do it the way I want to do it, you know, who knows what's going to happen, I guess. But I ended up, you know, lined up on a taxiway but I didn't ever land there. Of course, I figured it out beforehand, but I peeled off and did a 360 and got lined up with the right runway. But it was a big fat taxiway. It looked good enough to land on, but it just,
that's legal.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
there's no FAR that says that you have to land on a runway.
Oh, is that right? All right. Oh,
no, otherwise you couldn't do off field.
Well, yeah,
just ask a couple heavies that landed or took off on taxiways.
Yeah, there was a Delta that did that. I think last year landed on a taxiway at Atlanta. Whoops.
Now, that's pretty sick. Just because there's no FAR, though, doesn't mean you're keeping your job.
Yeah.
Well, they weren't cleared to land on the taxiway. It was a controlled field, so.
True.
Cleared to land runway something, not taxiway Alpha or Bravo.
One right, 2-2 right, Alpha.
We flew up to Payson. Payson's a great little flight because it's exactly 50 nautical miles in a straight line, center airport to center of the airport, which means I'm not able to use it as a cross country. So I was never actually able to use Payson as one of my cross country flights. It used to be, but it's not anymore because it's exactly 50 miles and it has to be 50.1 or over 50 miles, as you know. So anyways, we flew up there and I took the right seat on the way up, and I let Dean take the right seat on the way back, and so I shot a little video on the way back, and we had him fly it and had him do like a steep turn, 360-degree steep turn on the way back and stuff like that, so it was kind of fun. But the cool thing about it was that as we were getting ready to leave, I was walking up to the plane, and up some stairs on this little hill parking lot, and I see some big rotor blades, and so I'm like, oh, there's a big ass helicopter up there. What is it? So I go up there, and it's an Ericsson air crane, And it was just incredibly huge. I cannot believe how big that thing was. I've never seen one, you know, in real life. I've only seen them in videos, and I know they're huge, but standing next to one of those ginormous things is just incredible. And it was one of the crews that was working the fire, you know, working the fires out here in northern Arizona. So they were kind of staging from that area. So we got to talk to the crew and to one of the pilots for a while, and I got to get up inside the cockpit and look around and stuff, and it was a lot of fun. Interesting.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Those things are huge.
It's just I mean, like one of the rotor blades, just one, costs about $250,000. And the support trailer that follows this plane around, you know, I saw these like long boxes on the top of it. I go, is that where your extra rotor blades are? He said, yeah. They were just sitting there cleaning it that when we were up there actually. And you know, what's cool is on the back side of the cockpit, there's another seat. There's a third jump seat, and you can a cyclic goes right there, and you can actually fly the thing from a backward facing seated position. And so that's where like a flight engineer would sit and control the helicopter while they're like picking up or lowering something with the implement that's attached to it at the time. But the pilot up front would actually be working the rotor or the rudder pedals, I mean, and you'd be running the cyclic from back there.
I was going to say, do they wire everything backwards to that?
You would think, huh? You would have to be. Well, maybe not, because pushing forward would make the plane go backwards.
What I mean. They'd have to wire it backwards.
Yeah, but forward for you. Yeah. It'd be just as if it, I don't think. I think it'd be exactly the same. It's just you're seated on the opposite side of it.
Right.
No.
So pulling the stick towards you
would make the plane would make the helicopter go forward, right?
Backwards.
But backwards to you.
Yeah, but it's the same orientation. I think that's what Chris is saying.
Oh, I'm saying. Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I remember a video. I don't know if it was something through AOPA or Discovery or something, but I remember talking about this. It was a really interesting video, and it talked about all of this stuff. And as soon as you're talking about this, I start visualizing this video that I saw. It was very, very in depth, and God, I'm gonna see if I can find it. It might have been an AOPA or a man. I'll have to find it. It's really cool. A lot of history on the sky crane.
It is incredible. So the Ericsson sky crane, it's called the air crane. They called it, but I've seen some called sky cranes, and this one's called air crane. But its name was Isabel, and it can basically pick up its own weight. Around 30,000 pounds, something like that.
Wow. Well, how else would it fly?
Should we say double its weight, I guess. You know, itself plus its own weight. It holds like 25,000 pounds of liquid. Not always water, but it was using the fire retardant because it was all red underneath there, you know. It's incredible.
Yeah, I got to see one last year bring in a Ford Explorer underneath of it.
It wouldn't even feel that. It's incredible. This thing is so big. It wouldn't even – you know, they're slow, though.
Yeah.
They flew this one here from California. It only does about 100 knots.
Yeah, they don't go very fast, but, man, they're fun to watch fly.
Mm-hmm.
I got up to the one – up next to the one at Oshkosh. That's the limit of my exposure.
So this thing's owned by Ericsson Crane and then leased out. This one's leased out to the Forest Service that they do all the fire putting out, you know, fire protection with it. That great big hose that comes off the side of it, it only needs 18 inches of water to be in order to fill its tanks. If there's 18 inches of water to draft from, it can do its job. Doesn't seem like very much considering how big that hose is.
Yeah, not really. Wow.
The members of the In the Pattern podcast are participating as private individuals. Their comments do not necessarily reflect the views of the various organizations they work with. the instructors they learn from, or the flight schools they attend. Remember, these guys are student pilots, so anything you hear on this podcast that sounds like advice on an aircraft operation is obviously from the perspective of student pilot. You should always consider your own situation, consult your instructor, remember your training, and fly the airplane. Cleared for the option.
So, Mark.
Yes.
Are you with me?
Yeah, well, you know what? Actually, I did go up Friday, finally.
All right. All right. That's all right. I quit.
No, I've had between work and weather and some personal stuff going on, things that my wife and I were trying to do, and that took me out of the game for about 6 or 7 weeks, but things are settled down, everything's back to normal, and I was talking to her, and I'm like, honey, I need to go shake the rust off. And she's like, all right, go. And as a matter of fact, we were actually the weekend before, for Father's Day weekend, we were at my youngest daughter's soccer tournament in Reno, and we're up in Costco. And I see the GoPro 960 Hero that I've been wanting for like a year. And she's like, well, is that really what you want? I'm like, yeah. She goes, well, there you go. Happy Father's Day. I'm like, are you kidding me? Seriously? Yeah, you can have that. So I'm like, you're awesome. So it was one of my excuses, A, go knock some rust off Friday evening, but I wanted to go try this GoPro. And it took some really good footage. I was trying to edit some of it earlier before the podcast here. And but all I really did, I went up there. It was a perfect afternoon. We probably had maybe a 7-knot crosswind, which is, you know, as a student pilot, it's kind of, you know, I think I'm limited to 10, 9 or 10. But it was nice and calm, kind of warm. When I got up there at Auburn, it was probably 88 to 91 degrees. Density altitude was about 4,000 feet, and the field elevation is 1,500. So I was a little concerned about that, and I looked around, and I'm like, you know. So I talked to one of the head instructor there, and he's like, nah, you're fine. If you don't feel comfortable, you can always, you know, bring it, you know, taxi back before you take off. And he goes, and I'll have my radio here, and just in case you need to talk to anybody. And as I get out there, I do my pre-flight, and I set up the camera, and I listen to the ATIS, and I do my taxi out, and I do my run up, and I'm like, all right, here it is. 6 weeks later, I haven't flown anything, so let's go. It was perfect takeoff. Just stayed in the pattern. I did 4 full stops. I could have done touch and goes. I could have done anything I wanted to do. You know, it was my time. And I decided to do full stops. That way I could come back, do my after landing checklist, and, you know, kind of get back into the habit of doing all that stuff. So that's really all I did. I put 0.7 on the Hobbs, and but it was enough for me to get up and go, okay, I'm good. Now I'm ready to, you know, get back into training. So hopefully within the next couple of weeks, I'll get to knock out my last long duel, do my solo cross countries, and then start prepping for the check ride. But that's basically all I've done. I'm finishing up this video, and I'll get it up either on my YouTube, or I'll post it on Twitter or something, just to show proof that I actually flew.
So do you have it over the nose, or where'd you mount it?
You know, actually, I put it basically right. It's up on the dash. It comes with a couple of different mounts, and they're just like the double sided tape on the mount. And I put it basically where the right seat would look out.
Okay.
And it's the GoPro actually has 170 degree field of view.
Yeah.
And I was guessing. I'm just looking at the front of it, and I'm guessing, you know, kind of pointing it where it should be. And it turns out that I got this thing nailed exactly right, you know, right off the top of the nose. And it had a little bit of artifacting, but it's not as bad as some of the ones I've seen before. And I think that's maybe because of the wide field of view.
Cool.
One of the users on Twitter suggested that I put it on manual focus in infinite. By the time I got up there, I completely forgot all about that. So I have to play with some of the settings on here and see how it does. But, you know, on the computer, it looks really good. I was actually direct feeding it to my Sony Bravia when I got home. And it, even at 50 inches, it still looked really good. So,
oh, good.
The one downside is that the windscreen's really dirty, and I'm taking off directly into the sun.
Oh yeah.
So it's like, it kind of sucked. But I mean, in you know, I think I flew at probably 5 o'clock, so the sun is like right at, say, 20 degrees off the horizon. So when I get done, you guys will see it, and you can critique my high speed or low speed or whatever kind of landings. But I had one that I came in a little hot, but I was actually, you'll see as you turn base to final, there's a hill and on a valley right below the end of the runway, and it's deceiving. The end of the runway actually has about a 10 to 15 degree canter down to the valley, so it's an optical illusion that you've got a battle, and then but there's, when you get a crosswind going across there's some serious swirls that happen right down in that valley. You'll see me coming in, all of a sudden it starts bouncing around, get right over the runway, it kind of settles down. But that's one of the nature of this airport and a couple of the other ones around here. So anyway, it was fun. It was a little challenging, and I had a good time. It was nice to get up in the plane again by myself. So
cool.
I just want to knock it out and be able to go, you know, go somewhere and, you know, do the $100 hamburger thing.
Yeah, very well done.
So anyway, that's what I'm doing, or I've been doing.
So how'd you feel after like being off for that long, getting back into it for the first time by yourself solo?
To be honest, you know, when I was taxiing out, I was a little bit nervous. You know, I haven't looked at my logbook. I didn't even log this because I only have to log certain training time. You don't have to log all your hours, mm-hmm. whatever it is, but I'll probably put it in there anyway, just for my own time. But, I was a little bit nervous, especially with the crosswind going. It was kind of gusty, but it wasn't crazy, you know. So I was like, all right. Matter of fact, when I'm start doing the engine start, I'm pointing, and just off to the right, you see the flag up on a flagpole there, and it's fully extended. So you're looking at it going, huh, do I really want to do this? But so I'm a little bit nervous, and you know, once I took off and I was climbing out, I was like, all right. I feel great. It was almost like the first time soloing. You're nervous as hell coming up to it, and then you finally start taxiing like I did. I started taxiing. I'm like, all right, it's time for business. So all the fear and anticipation went away, and it was kind of like that today or Friday. And but once I rotated wheels off the ground, I was where I needed to be. If that makes any sense,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm. Training took over right then.
Absolutely, you know, and I was. Everything took over. Yeah, exactly. And I'm on. Okay, if the engine goes out, I'm going straight ahead. Or, you know, I was already thinking all that stuff and climbing up the pattern altitude. I was like, okay, I need to make my turn here, make my calls, da da da. And it's usually when I'm in the downwind, you have a little bit of a time to stop and think. And I'm looking around going, damn, this is cool. You know, I missed this. So, you know, but it was good to be up. And I was glad I did it. And it makes me want to hurry up and get back into the training schedule and just finish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, I really enjoy even just doing some pattern work just by myself, me and the plane. Man, I had a lot of fun that the day before my check ride when I did that for 1.6 hours. I mean, it was a lot of fun.
You did 1.6 hours of touch and goes?
Yeah, I needed a solo time.
Oh, okay.
So it was, it was a lot, you know, it was a lot of time, but I had a blast.
Did you get about 25 in or?
No. No, I only got, maybe 12.
Okay. Cool.
That's still a lot.
I forgot that I flew by myself, since the last time we talked too. I just looked at my logbook. I flew on the 11th, my instructor was busy, so I'm like, all right, I'm going to go take the plane then. She's like, okay. So I just took it out to just go, you know, practice some loss procedures with VOR and stuff like that, and steep turns around a point, and just stuff like that. And so it wasn't very windy when I took off, and Mark just reminded me of this. It was, you know, only like 6 knots or whatever. But I was out for about an hour, and I got ATIS to head back in, and it said, now I'm coming in on runway 7, and it said the wind was 150 at 10 knots, gusting to 18, and low-level wind shear. Thank you very much. And after it said that, I actually said out loud, oh, shit. And I, you know, my instructor's not with me. I'm by myself, low-level wind shear. About three things went to my head. Well, I can try the landing. If it's no good, I'll just go around. No big deal, as long as it, you know, doesn't get crazy. What other airport can I fly to that 150 wouldn't be so bad? Should I go to Scottsdale? Should I go to Glendale? You know, all these things go through my head because I don't want to bend the damn aircraft. No way. I, you know, gusting to 18, it has a demonstrated crosswind of 17, so that's just awesome. It all worked out well. I squeaked it right on, and I was crabbed into the wind so nicely. It was so fun. I like crabbing anyways to land. It's just kind of fun. Dean does it all the time in the little Cessna 140, regardless of what the wind is. That's just the way he likes to land because it's cool. But that's what I did. I was just like coming down all kinds of, you know, 45 degree kind of sideways ish. And turned it nose down the center of the runway once I was about like 10 feet off the ground or so and squeaked it right in. It just went perfect. But I literally was just, you know, slightly less than terrified just hearing the words of the gust and the low-level wind shear because it's not something I'm really fond of being in, not without my instructor, you know. But you know, I got the practice and walked away from it, and the plane's reusable, and nothing got bent up, so I'm in good shape when, as far as that goes. Not that I want to go practice in that a whole lot. I guess your luck will run out one day.
No, were they calling for a change in the wind that way?
The low-level wind shear?
Well, that and the gusts. I mean, was it supposed to get windier?
I don't know. I don't remember getting a later forecast, as it were, because I was just going to go out and go play around for an hour and come back. And when I left, it was, you know, relatively calm, 6 knots or whatever. So I didn't go look up a forecast because I wasn't going to do a cross country or anything.
So did you say what was the wind across the runway?
My runway's 7 and the wind was 150.
At
10, gusting to 18.
Okay. Do you have on your endorsement, do you have a maximum crosswind component?
Yep. And that's more than that. My crosswind component's 10.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's in here somewhere. Somewhere in my logbook. I think that's what it is. That was one of the first things that she wrote whenever I got to go do solo.
Right.
So don't tell no one. Shh. Yeah, 10. Yeah. DVFR 10 knots. So I should ask her to bump it up now? Is that what you're saying?
Well, next time you might want to just choose going to another airport.
Yeah. Well, I try it. If it's nasty, I'll forget about it and just go to another airport. Like I said, it was in my mind.
Yeah.
But you know, cause the wind, the gusting and the wind shear, that doesn't mean it's constant, you know, it just means
right. It's
out there at some point. I was sideways a little bit, but it wasn't like, I never got a whoosh, you know, I was never like shoved across from one way or another. It landed pretty nicely.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, that's tough conditions.
If I was bumpy up and down and pushing me left and right real hard, I would have definitely have thought about the runway orientations of Scottsdale or Goodyear or Glendale or somewhere close and thought about what they were going to be like. I think Glendale would have worked out pretty good. That would have been more or less into the wind. But then that kind of sucks. Hey, I've got your plane over here and, well, my truck's over there. Can you come get me? I'll trade you truck for plane.
But, they'll be glad.
Yeah.
You'll get big kudos.
Yeah. Thanks for not busting up our plane. Here's your truck. Yeah. Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, Glendale looks like it's got a runway 19. That would have worked out pretty good, too.
Yeah.
But, hey, you walked away.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't bend the aircraft.
Not,
that's a win.
Not even a bounce, so I missed. I was in between a wind shear and a gust, I guess.
Did you get it down on the one wheel and then hold it there for a while as it slowed up?
Well, the two mains first, and then the front, of course, and I took the flaps off and get the brakes and pulled the yoke back and slowed it down. I made it after the second taxiway, I think, onto the second taxiway that I came to, so it slowed down good.
Yeah, well done.
On some bummer news is that the pilot shop inside the Deer Valley Airport is closing after 17 years of business, of being in business. They're going out of business. So it's kind of a bummer to hear that. I got an email about it on Saturday night, I guess. And their last day in business is going to be this Thursday. So I went in there on Sunday and picked up a few things because everything is like 20 to 50% off. But it's kind of sad to hear that it's going out of business because that little airport, you know, needs a good pilot shop. But the guy said, he goes, you know what happened is that things started getting rough around here and my suppliers went direct to the schools that are here and just undercut them. So that sucks. But I picked up a little... A little laminated checklist for the Archer that I fly, and I picked up an ASA trifold knee board. It's the IFR one, or it has the IFR stuff on it. You know how they have IFR.
You're not allowed to use it then.
I'm not even allowed to use it. I know it's holding pattern crap and stuff like that. I don't know.
You shouldn't even have it.
I'm not even endorsed to even own one of these things. I understand. But it doesn't. The picture shows a chart in the little side pocket. It doesn't fit. Apparently, they used scissors to cut it off or folded it up or something. I don't know. But I'm not too impressed with it. I also got a.
Do you suppose it's for an IFR chart?
Yeah. Right.
No, they're different sizes.
No.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
They actually make them in different sizes.
Yeah.
Pulling my leg.
Nope. Go to Runway Finder or what is it? Sky Vector. Sky Vector will show you the charts.
Maybe that's the case. I don't know. I'm going to probably give it to a friend of mine who's going to go, going to be going through his IFR training anyways.
You're not starting as soon as you're done?
What's that?
You're not starting as soon as you're done?
No, probably not right away. I was thinking about waiting about a year. But I did pick up while I was there the PrepWare Instrument Rating Comprehensive Preparation for FAA Acknowledged Exams by ASA, the CD-ROM software with all the test questions and study modules and this and that.
Yeah, that's probably good for you.
It's
start now.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Exactly. Well, it's a 2008 version, so it's 3 years old, and he just gave it to me for free, anyways. So I got all this stuff for $22. But you know how much? Yeah, I'm sure the questions can't have changed a whole lot in the last 3 years.
Well,
I'm sure most of them are still the same, but I'm sure they've.
I mean, the FAA pulled that stuff with the CFI test.
Well, and not just the CFI test, wasn't it the commercial too?
I knew it was something else. I knew it was the CFI. I didn't know what other ones they did, but they just up and changed them.
But they reverted it already.
Yeah.
They figured it.
Still.
They took a lot of people's money and flunked a lot of people. And they, I think, didn't they end up giving a bunch of test questions back and changing scores on a lot of them, from what I read?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I haven't paid that close attention.
Brad, do you remember anything about that?
I remember that there was some that they reverted back to the old tests. I don't remember them trying to fix anybody else's.
Well, I think I read that somewhere. I could be wrong, but it sounds familiar.
Mm. Yeah.
But anyway, so Since I'm not rated for this knee board, I'll apparently give it to somebody. John,
well,
John, have you watched any cool plane videos on YouTube?
Oh, I haven't even rough. Had.
That's rough.
Wow,
that's just mean.
You know,
I guess you were counting all the times that he was giving you a hard time about your knowledge test,
yeah,
huh?
Right.
Let's see if you get a 10 at Osh.
Payback, or picked up from.
Yeah,
Milwaukee.
I'll leave you at MKE.
Oh my god,
you're walking.
Walking from Milwaukee.
Just get on a cow.
At midnight. Yeah.
No, I haven't watched a bunch of plane videos. I don't even have time for that right now with work, but and other work stuff. Basically selling my soul to the government. No, I haven't done much of anything aviation related other than planning for Oshkosh and just starting to stop doing work during the day and start planning what I'm going to do.
Speaking of Osh,
I
can't wait.
Oh, I can't. Wait,
can't the days just don't get come by soon enough. You know, go by fast enough for me.
June and beginning of July are long months, but now I'm hoping to get in a maybe get in a flight before I leave for Osh. I'm going camping this weekend, and actually I'll be testing all my camping gear and making sure I have everything, and it's a new tent, so
cool.
It'll be a good dry run for the week.
And you said you got an extra air mattress. I don't need to bring one, or
I should have an extra air mattress. I got to talk to my dad this week. I'm going to go up and hopefully grab everything.
Okay, let me know either way.
So should have enough stuff.
I'll pick one up. If not, if I don't have to bring one, great. More room for us here.
So I'm hoping to get up. I have about 2 weekends in there. I may be able to get in, either take my brother on a cross country, or, you know, I may just go do some pattern work for the hell of it.
Yeah, you should at least do that.
I'm going to try to get something in. Maybe even one night. I mean, it's getting dark late enough that I could probably sneak something in. So that's my goal. If I do take my brother, I'm going to Cambridge again and meeting with my grandparents, and I should be having lunch with them. And then I'm going to take, I think, I got to do all the math to make sure, but I think flying down there, I use enough fuel that I should be able to fit me and my grandparents in the plane. And I'm just going to go up, take them out of the pattern for a second, fly over their house on the Eastern Shore, and then come back in and land at Cambridge. So I'm hoping the math works out and I can do it. But that's the plan. We'll see how it goes. I want to get some flying in. I'm anxious.
Definitely. Get her done.
Yeah. So that's about all I have. I know I'm so boring. Stupid work. But I guess... we can go ahead and start wrapping it up here. Do we have any shout outs or anything you guys want to go over?
I'll give a shout out to the kind folks at Crystal Tower. They, on Father's Day, granted my son and I access up into the tower, and we took a little tour and got to look around, and they're actually having an open house at the field that day, so there was a lot of stuff going on, and we got to watch a lot of warbirds coming and going and doing low passes and all kinds of nifty stuff. It was
cool.
Really nice of them to let us come up and watch it happen, see what it looks like from the other side.
Yeah, I get to go in the tower once, but it was snowing, so nobody was coming in. That's cool, though.
Yeah, I got to do that a few months ago down here in Phoenix, going to the Tracon and up in the tower. That was a blast.
Yeah, I did the Tracon too. But.
Yeah, I've also done Minneapolis Center, and that's interesting. I mean, they get you hooked up, and you can listen to them talking to the aircraft coming in, and watch them stack up and see them routing around weather, because the Minneapolis Center controls basically Wyoming to Michigan. They've got a lot of space. Yeah, that was pretty cool to see.
Cool.
Cool.
No pictures, though.
Aww. Yeah, they don't even... not even close to letting you do that. And they had so much cool stuff to take pictures of, too.
So anybody else? Bueller?
Nothing for me.
Bueller? All right, Fine. I got a couple shout outs. Most of them, what a surprise, Oshkosh related, because that's all I'm thinking about these days. Just a couple things going on that week. Definitely the Osh Bash with Airplanista. They're doing a tweet up, meet up, Osh Bash on Friday night. I believe it's 6. If I'm correct on that. So if anyone's going to be down there, definitely come by and say hi. And I know he's also doing, have you guys seen that? He's doing some kind of Tweeple chase.
I saw something small about that.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
I read something about Tweeple something. I don't know.
Well, I know he's doing some kind of basically a scavenger hunt type of thing. To win some prizes over a couple days. So I'll see if I can find some more information of that and put it in. If we can put that in the show notes.
It's a new event. It will lead players on a clue-by-clue hunt to win prizes as they follow the Tweeple Chase hashtag on Twitter. It's
like, bring me the wingtip of an A380. Oh, I'm sorry. It's...
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's stuck in a building in France.
Yeah, you'll need a ladder.
Oh man.
Don't. It's tough to get parts for those.
You know, and that the worst part about that whole thing was it was being towed.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. They towed it into the side of the building.
I didn't notice that. Well, that's better than just ramming into the side of a CRJ.
Well, at least you know it's not the pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it would have obviously been probably a whole lot worse if the pilot actually did it under the engine's powers of, because it probably taxis faster than
King at all.
Oh, I know. It is gone.
and lodging it into the side of the building so that it didn't even fall to the ground.
Yeah. It was wedged in there. Yeah. Good. Nice souvenir.
One of my comments was going to be, obviously when they hire A380 pilots, they forget to teaching that the wings are a lot bigger than anything they've ever taxied.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
Tug pilots as well.
Run into CRJs, run into buildings.
Topic.
The My Transponder Party will definitely be going on. I don't know when that is yet. And I know Mark from AirPigs is doing a couple bacon parties.
We still don't know when Potapalooza is going to be.
Yeah, we don't even have a
podcast. I don't know when Potapalooza is going to be.
Let's go, Bill. Let's go, Bill.
I don't know if I'm going to be there.
Well, Kent... I know Kent runs a lot of that, but I don't know. I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anything about that or the My Transponder meetup yet.
Kent or Bill Will said that they were working on it and they hadn't gotten a slot yet.
Okay.
Please, not Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. At least wait till
see. And Monday last and Tuesday year. Are the days I'm likely to be there. So.
That's the days you're last likely to year. Be there.
Yeah, I've got the plane Monday, Tuesday, and then I've got Friday.
You know, I'm gonna be in Colorado on July 19th, and then coming back on the 24th. I'll be here for 2 days, and then getting on an airplane going to Oshkosh for the rest of that week.
This is all going to get cut anyway because John's not going to have this out before Osh. Oh.
Hello, Gauntlet.
Challenge accepted.
That's the only way I was going to get it to happen.
No, I was thinking about whether to put this stuff in here, and I said, you know what? It's going to be out before Osh because I want to record one more before we go down.
Edited or not, in its raw format.
Actually, this one wouldn't be pretty bad, other than, you're me having to edit you, but
little stall horn.
Yeah.
There's gonna be a lot of stall horns in this one. Anywho, that was my shout-outs.
I wanted to fly down there with Bill, but he's leaving on like Monday. He's leaving on Saturday the 23rd.
Okay, so he'll be there the day.
Yeah.
He'll probably beat me there.
Yeah.
He'll be there probably Monday.
And I told
him,
told him I'm still going to be in Colorado. He's like, that's fine. Where are you going to be? I'll just come pick you up. I'm like, yeah, my family would be thrilled. Bye. I'm done with your vacation. I'm doing a different one without you now. Bye bye.
Just head to Centennial. You'll be good.
No, I'll be there. My current schedule is to head up Saturday morning. So I should get there Saturday afternoon is my goal. I'm going to try to leave really early Saturday morning. And then that way I can kind of just relax for a day before everything gets crazy. And then I'll be leaving with Chris. What are we? Really early Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be packing up the tent in the dark.
Yeah, we'll be out of there at the butt crack of dawn.
Field opens at 6.
Yeah, well, we'll be out of there before then, I think, because we got to go down to Milwaukee, and then I got to drop him off at the airport, and then I'm bolting home.
I was actually thinking, man, I messed up. I shouldn't have bought that return trip ticket home if Bill had an open seat in his plane, if he wasn't going to fill up to go down and come back. He's got an empty seat on the way home. I could have just flown home with him.
Yeah,
I still could.
But I've already bought the damn ticket now, and they're non-refundable. So,
well, just use one half.
Huh?
Just use one half.
I know that, but then I'm gonna have to pay him for fuel and stuff. You know.
Yeah, but round trips are usually cheaper than one ways anyhow.
Yeah. Well, no, I did two different airlines actually because there's just a limited amount of. Planes coming in from Phoenix, and I'm not doing layovers. One way is the only way I fly, if at all possible. So
one stop.
Yeah, one way, or yeah, no stop. Well, yeah, one stop.
Right.
No layovers.
You want the plane to stop at least once.
Yeah, just once. Yeah. All right, we're here.
Jump.
Here's your parachute, buddy. That'd be awesome.
I'm okay with that.
Parachutes are an extra fee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be cool. Parachute into Oshkosh. Luggage in hand.
You gotta flap your baggage.
I know, man.
Rock your bags.
The bag, my bag's equipped with a parachute built into it. It's awesome.
Red and white parachute. Would you rock your bags? And
yeah, I'm gonna have to practice my short field and spot landing some more.
Yeah, you know, you should get on that.
Do a little showing off as you're coming in.
Are you doing, well, you won't have your,
I won't have my ticket yet.
IFR by then, yeah.
No, so I'll have to be, it'll be VFR or car.
Well, let me know when you're flying in and, I'll, make sure to watch your landing. I'll tape it.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
We'll get as many people with some, like, judging cards out there, you know, 1 through 9, holding them up.
I'll be like, yeah, I'm the guy in the Lear.
Well, I'm sure you'll do better than Roush did last year.
Oh.
Ouch.
Oh, man.
I wasn't there. I wasn't on the field when that happened.
I have insane pictures of that from someone who was there. Of that thing in action,
yeah.
As it's going through its motions.
Well, I was at a bacon party with Mart at the time, and I started seeing tweets about a midair. So I was like, what? There's a midair. And then I saw stuff about the airport's closed. And then we looked up and we're like, it is kind of quiet. And then actually Jack Hodgson came around, and then he started talking about it. So we found out it was Roush and all that kind of stuff. And I found out weeks later that there actually was also a midair.
Jeez.
I think it was over Fisk. There was it was like a Piper or an Cessna or something, just kind of clipped one of the main gear and the vertical, the tail. Not a lot of damage. They both made it fine, but.
Eek.
Yeah, it was a crazy afternoon.
Well, you know that's not Roush's first plane that he's pancaked.
No, he was like in the water too, wasn't he? For like 6 minutes?
This last time or the first time?
No, the first time. You like hit like power lines and like ended up in the water and like was like submerged for a couple minutes.
Yeah, I don't know the I just knew that he had done it once before.
Yeah, it was some kind of crazy accident. I was like, man, the fact that you went back into flying.
Yeah. He lost an eye on this one, didn't he?
Yeah, and somehow he got his license back.
I sent you those pictures. Look at the dude taxiing by in the Cessna 140 as he's destroying this plane.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy, the inside of that Cessna 140 must have stunk horribly.
Yeah. New seat cushion.
Yeah. That's how I got the pictures, is that a buddy of mine who was there is friends with a bunch of Cessna 140 pilots. My buddy Dean, who's got the 140, and that was one of his friends who took the picture.
Yeah, I'm hopeful to not repeat that.
Mm-hmm. You can do better. Mm-hmm. I'm sure of it.
All right, well...
That about does it.
I think at this point we're good.
You can reach all of us at In the Pattern Podcast at podcast@inthepatternpodcast.com. On Twitter is In the Pattern. It's my transponder group for In the Pattern Podcast. And lastly, you can find us on iTunes as In the Pattern Podcast. You can reach me, John, at john@inthepatternpodcast.com. Or on Twitter and my transponder as Pilot Conway.
Chris? Yeah, you can find me at chris@inthepatternpodcast.com as well. On Twitter at CHOLUBAZ, that's CHOLUBAZ. And my transponder is also CHOLUBAZ. And Mark?
Yeah, you can find me at mark@inthepatternpodcast.com, student pilot Mark on Twitter, and M. Lacoste on my transponder. Give us a shout.
I'm Brad Kane. You can reach me on Twitter at Bravo Romeo Alpha Delta Kilo Oscar Echo Hotel November.
I am Kane, K-O-E-H-N, on my transponder, and Brad at inthepatternpodcast.com.
And lastly, if you'd like, you can leave us a text message or a voicemail. The phone number is 707-PCAST-01. That's 707-PAPA-CHARLIE-ALPHA-SIERRA-TANGO-01.
Well, that wraps up this episode of the In the Pattern Podcast. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Remember, make left traffic, you're cleared for the option.
Shows at the Aviation Podcast Network.
The Voices in Your Head.com.
How's that Jeremiah weed?
This thing is crap. I'm thinking of going to find some bums along the street and handing them out. Not my favorite.
Brad, do not listen to this while driving.
Not my favorite drink. There will be no repurchase in the future for me for Jeremiah Weed Lightning Lemonade. Sorry.
Oh, man.
I should have known better. Just by the can alone should have told me this isn't going to work.
Well, the words Jeremiah Weed should have given that away. Yeah. But...
You know, Steve Tupper is talking all about Jeremiah Weed this. I'm like, I got to go try this. I've never even seen it. And I happen to run across it. Jeremiah Weed, Lightning Lemonade. It's in a can, you know. And this stuff is crap. Sorry, Steve.
Well, they just came out with it, and that's not the Jeremiah Weed he's talking about.
Oh. No, the real old school Jeremiah Weed is some of the nastiest shit you'll ever drink.
So it ain't no better.
Yeah,
huh?
He doesn't drink it because it's good.
No. He drinks it because
it's an Air Force tradition.
That's right. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. Well,
and as he calls himself, he's a fanboy, so he wants to stick with tradition.
I hope that got recorded, by the way, that little vignette.
Oh, yes.
What's next? I'm scared.
Well, at least you know it'll clear your average 172 or Piper, so.
True. The only thing I really have to worry about there is about the gear.
And the engine.
The engine would just,
well, yeah, and the engine.
The engine would suck my Archer in and shit it out like it wasn't even there.
Hang on. Quiet for a sec.
Very nice.
Thank you.
That was a quality bottle top pop right there.